It's time for the Lunch Break on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. To be a part of the show, give us a call at 321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or tweet us at Lunch Break ESPN.
What's up? It's the Lunch Break on ESPN 106.7. Justin Ferguson, Painter Sharpless. Hello, Painter.
You have been a busy boy this week. I mean, you find ways to stay busy regardless.
Right.
But this one's... Are you sleepy? Are you?
Yeah, I am actually.
Yeah, you know, and like,
I am actually.
All right, well, snap out of it because
I'll be fine.
I know you'll be fine.
I've just been staring at a screen for the last hour and a half.
You just wrapped up your Q&A with Seth. You said there were a lot of Georgia fans interaction.
Oh, yeah.
Did you get some Auburn interaction as well?
For sure. Yeah. There was a good bit of Auburn fans in there, but I mean the Georgia fan base is so
it's large.
It's so big. And Seth does a really good job, and he sells a lot of subscriptions, so there's going to be a lot of Georgia fans in there. But yeah, it was a good time. And the Q&A at the Athletic is
What were some of the maybe repeated questions or some of their biggest concerns from the Georgia fan base about Auburn's team and what they want to do to be successful?
I think they're really interested to see how Georgia's offense is going to try to attack Auburn's defense.
Yeah.
Because they look at Auburn's defense much like Auburn looks at Georgia's defense, like, wow, they do a lot of things
How
do you have success? And, you know, the thing here is I think this is going to be a game that depends on explosive plays that – it's going to be tough for both of these teams to sustain drives consistently on each other just because they're really good at doing some of those things. And that favors Auburn a little bit, I think, just because they have more of that kind of big, like, that boom or bust potential on offense. Like when Auburn scores this season, it's been usually fairly quickly. And you might need some of those big plays, you know, get those quick drives and let your defense, you know, kind of hold them in check. But Auburn's going to have to, you know, keep its defense off the field at times as well. And, you know, Georgia's going to want to try to control the clock and control the time of possession in this one. But, the more you look ahead into this game, these are two teams that don't give up a lot of big plays. So it feels like any big play that happens in this game is going to be just, like, even more important. And it'll be interesting to see if Auburn can be the one that does that or if it's Georgia, because as much as Georgia's offense hasn't put up a lot of points this year,
the playmakers, the experienced quarterback, a good offensive line, like it can happen.
They've got a ton of talent. Yeah, it's just,
and we've seen
all the pieces haven't fit together right this year for them.
Auburn seems to be a team in which sometimes the pieces for other teams come in place, and like Auburn catches them just at the wrong time. Now, I think we're all aware of how well Georgia's recruited since Kirby Smart's gotten there. So that's part of, I think, the frustration of the Georgia fan base, a part of the probably larger conversation about Fromm and Justin Fields and the success Fields is having at Ohio State. You could go round and round in circles on that. But, the defense, as good as they've been for Auburn, will have their hands full. It's just odd that they haven't had more success.
Like
Georgia being.
Exactly. And, like, they're capable of putting it all together. It's just, can they? And this season, no one has done that. I mean, look, that's the thing about Auburn's defense that has been so outstanding this year is that you look at the games they've played this year, LSU – yeah, they've had some good drives on Auburn, but they've been putting up 50 points a game against pretty much everybody this season. So the fact that you hold them to 24 is pretty outrageous. Florida, a couple big plays changed that game. And some of it was your own mistakes on
some missed tackles.
And then a turnover. Turnover really changed it as well. So if Auburn plays a clean game and relies on its defense, you got to like their chances in this one. I get the sense, though, that from the Georgia side, they're looking at Auburn saying, oh, well, yeah, Auburn beats Georgia at home, but it's when they have something to play for. And I'm like, Auburn's got a lot to play for. It might not be a championship, but I think Auburn's got a lot to play for in terms of what is this program going to look like, you know, next year? What are they going to feel like going into 2020? And what does that even look like, depending on how they do against Georgia and Alabama? And, of course, this is Auburn, and this is an Auburn team and a program that just thrives on messing your world up. And I think, you know, they had it at Banner Society yesterday. Spencer Hall wrote it.
What a good story.
About how Auburn's MO is just to wreck your world, usually, if you're the other team. And sometimes Auburn wrecks its own season. That's just kind of the nature of it. Somebody pointed out they're the most overrated and underrated team simultaneously in college football history. AP poll, no team has more fluctuations on where they end up, depending on where they started, than Auburn. And you combine that with the knack for making chaos happen, it's just...
And, you know, for all the conversation about how difficult Auburn's schedule is because of its primary rivals being who they are, it does put you in a... It makes you a relevant team in a lot of ways, even if the team is not in the playoff picture, because you can, like you say, and we talked about this yesterday, Auburn has the chance to perhaps hold out three teams from making the playoff in the next 3 weeks with Oregon in consideration.
Right, and so this is a big spot here for Auburn, and I think it's a big spot for the program, and I'm very interested to see. The more I think about it, the more I think that this could be a win for Auburn for a number of reasons. These teams are so similar that I lean towards the team at home when the teams are so similar on paper. Inconsistent offense, outstanding defense, lean towards the team at home. And I know Georgia's got a lot to play for, and I know Georgia is, you know, got a chance to make the playoff if they win out. But here's my thing about Georgia. They're going to be fine. Like, if they lose this game and just only go 10-2 this season and then go to the SEC title game at 10-2, they're going to be fine. Like, everybody's buying into Kirby Smart. If Auburn loses this game, what does this look like for Gus Malzahn? What kind of
pressure does it put
and
in?
Already getting a little bit tougher of a situation, what does that even look like for Auburn? And I keep going back to this, Painter. We've seen it several times already when Gus Malzahn has his back up against the wall.
Odd.
They find something.
It's odd.
It works. They
2016 LSU, 2017.
After the LSU game?
Yeah, I mean it's bizarre. It is. It's weird how, and you know, in 17 we talked about this some at the time. He seemed more
2018 they beat A&M when they absolutely needed it.
Right. He has seemed more relaxed, oddly enough, in moments like this.
The fact of them being at home, I think, is going to make
I think a big difference maker. 321-1390, join the conversation. Follow along at ESPN 106.7. Auburn High School football Friday night will be in Mobile. That will start at 6:30 on Wings 94.3. One of the conversation points you brought up throughout the last couple of weeks, you did a story on it at The Athletic, Justin, Bo Nix. What it's going to be like for him at home for the first time in one of these marquee matchups.
It's crazy because when you look at it, his splits this season have been pretty crazy compared to home and away, and then compared to ranked teams versus unranked teams, or teams with winning records versus teams who don't have winning records. Like, it is significant, the difference. And for the first time, he's going to play a really good team, number 4 in the country.
In a more comfortable place.
In a spot where the crowd's not breathing down his neck. And that is where we're going to find something out about Auburn's offense and Bo Nix. And pointed out, no, it's not all on Bo Nix. Auburn's whole offense has to execute better. But he's the quarterback. And when you're the quarterback, you have a lot of pressure on you. It's a lot going to be on you, especially when you're playing a really outstanding run defense, a defense that hasn't done this in a very, very long time in terms of like holding on or holding people from scoring rushing touchdowns. Bo Nix is going to have to make plays to win this game. He's going to have a good game in order for Auburn to win, I think. So in that case, no, I'm not expecting him to drop 300 on Georgia and throw for 3 or 4 touchdowns. But he's going to need to play a lot better than
play clean.
He's going to have to play a lot better than he had against LSU. He's going to have to play better than he had against Florida. He's going to have to play a lot better than he had against Oregon. And those are the three teams they played this year that are ranked. That's it. A&M has fallen out of the top 25. A&M is not the team we thought they were going to be at the beginning of the season. So, his three worst games this season have come against the three best teams he's played. And now we're going to find out, was the Oregon game? Yeah, week one. You still got the win, but it was week one. It's a weird environment in neutral site game. Was it playing in the swamp? Was it playing in Death Valley and the freshman mistakes you had? The other thing about it is learning from those mistakes. Is also going to be key. He's had his ups and downs, and he's had some downs in big games this year, but he's learned from them, and does that experience make any difference when you get this next shot at a really good team? That's the question, and I think Malzahn's one of those guys who thinks that he is going to learn from it. And then, additionally, like we talked about with Seth yesterday, Georgia's played a bunch of backup quarterbacks this year. And so there might be a value in the fact that Bo Nix has been there since day one this season as the number one guy and has learned from the ups and downs of playing in big games, whereas Georgia's defense is outstanding. There's no doubt about it. They've played a lot of teams that are not very good on offense and not a lot of teams that are at their full strength on offense.
Do it in my head. Missouri last week. I mean, Trask is sort of different as he's now.
Trask was the asterisk there because I think Florida's looked better with Trask than it was with Franks.
South Carolina.
But South Carolina was down to their third quarterback when they played and lost to him. Kentucky's been using a converted quarterback and Lynn Bowden to do it. Who else was it? There was another one. Brian Moore made his first career start against Tennessee when Tennessee came up there, or when they
that
when
is
Tennessee
unusual.
Hosted
I had not thought about how many backup quarterbacks they've played.
They
That's
didn't play
weird.
And they didn't play Kelly Brown last week. Missouri had to use two quarterbacks in that game. So like if you look at the teams where they've used their number one quarterback from the beginning of the year, it's like the easy home games they've played: Vanderbilt and Notre Dame. That's it. That's it. They've had a real streak where they've been playing nothing but guys that weren't number one cornerbacks. And maybe that makes a difference in this game. I don't know.
It's a good note and a good point. 321-1390 to join us here in the Key of Auburn studio. Daniel is on the line. Hey, Daniel.
Hey, guys. Something I want to make a comment about what you're just talking about. Then I had a kind of a question for you. I think the same mistakes against LSU that he made against Florida. I think that's something that people miss sometimes. Plus, he was put in some more difficult situations, a la the center really not helping him out, even more third and longs than we faced against Florida.
Yep.
So
yep.
I don't think he's getting quite the credit in terms of he didn't throw a bunch of interceptions in LSU.
Mm-hmm.
He had some opportunities, and he had, I think, one or two more drops in that game than he did previously. So he didn't make the same mistakes. That's encouraging to me.
And also, before you get to your question, Daniel, I didn't mean to interrupt there, but the other thing there is that he led them on that drive late to get him in a position to try to get that onside kick as well. I mean, he didn't fold, and that's something to be said of a guy in a tough spot.
Look, it might have been one of the cleanest drives he had.
Exactly.
I mean, there was a little bit of good fortune on one of the throws, but
yeah.
Sure, absolutely. And the other thing is, and it's kind of a comment question, but I did want to – you alluded to it earlier, and it's just a strange thing about Auburn. I love that article you referred to, by the way. That was that was tragic and beautiful and awesome and sad.
Yes.
All the things.
That's about Auburn football right there.
Yeah, it is. It is. Long-time fan alumni knows that.
So, oh, yeah.
Here's what I wanted to ask about. Gus seemed at his press conference to have a little bit of that spicy Gus to him. You know, he was asked, I think somebody asked him about getting too cute, and he was like, too cute, you know, he did his Gus thing. But then, and he kind of followed it up. He was like, well, you can tell me after the game. And he kind of had, I don't know, maybe I'm missing it, but it seemed like he had a little bit of wry confidence that comes before these types of things and a relaxed version of himself that I think spells good news for Auburn, maybe bad news for Georgia. Have y'all seen that? What do you think is causing that in him?
Yeah, that's a great question, Daniel. We appreciate your call. He is one of those things. He gets in these moods like right before these games, these big games that he plays in, and it's like there is that confidence in him. And I think part of it comes to the fact that they're going to be really, really prepared for this game. And now it might not execute correctly, and it might not look pretty during the game, but like they've had the off week. Georgia didn't get the off week. And what do we know about Gus Malzahn, Painter?
He's good on bye weeks.
He's undefeated off of bye weeks. So there's a lot of confidence in that and the fact that they've been able to get after Georgia a little bit earlier than usual.
I had to play fill in the blank there. I wasn't sure which. Sometimes you lob one up to me and I miss. You're like, hey, what's that obvious thing?
Hello, I'm trying to get you involved here.
I appreciate that.
I'm trying to pass the ball here. But yeah, no, I think that's I think that's part of it. I also think part of it is like he thinks he's got a team that's good enough to win this game, and he should, because this team is good enough to win this game, especially at home and especially with the defense he's got. And he's got a lot of confidence, and I wrote something about it today at The Athletic. He's got a lot of confidence in the fact that being at home is going to make a big difference for his offense. And so you put that together, I think there is that kind of right confidence. And it's just exactly what we said earlier, Painter. Like, when his back's up against the wall, he's at his most comfortable. It's in these situations where maybe the pressure's on him and the fact that, oh, wow, everybody's eyes are on you, and look, Auburn's undefeated. And what are they going to do in the swamp? This is going to be a really big test. And, oh, no, they can't get out of first gear on offense. Or, oh, no, they ran the ball. 40 times up the middle in the second half and blew a lead to LSU 2 years ago. Like, those are the times that when it's like, all right, if you don't win this game, it ain't going to – things around here ain't going to be great for you. And it's like, all right, well, hold on a second. And there it goes. So I think that plays something for – that's a great question from Daniel. Like, I think all that kind of plays into itself.
This was from Spencer Hall, just a brief part of that really good article, Banner Society. I would encourage folks to check
great.
It out.
It's great. And people get on to me from time to time for saying, Auburn needs to embrace his reputation. It is not being this juggernaut in college football just because of where they are in the SEC, but being this team that's awesome in any other conference, they would be really awesome. It's just like Auburn has got that thing where, like, yeah, on paper, Bama and Georgia and LSU should probably beat you most years, but there's just something about them where they'll do it, and they're going to do it in the most infuriating way to the other
should
team.
Should Auburn's athletic slogan move from the Auburn family to embrace anarchy?
And hashtag chaos Auburn is what we've.
Seems a little bit less political than anarchy. It starts getting Joker-esque. But he writes, Spencer Hall does, preseason rankings cannot hold their madness. They are somehow among our most historically, and he links this to the point you've made, underrated and overrated.
They are. It's
programs.
Amazing.
Aspiring champion Tigers have finished with nothing while humble Outback Bowl dreamers have reached title games. Predicting one or the other is pointless.
Right. And so you come in, and that's the whole thing. He points out the fact that they have fallen short of expectations, which is what Auburn fans are always frustrated about with Auburn. But the other thing you get from Auburn is they'll mess you up when you least expect it. Or even when, like, how many times has Auburn snatched a title game appearance from Alabama, or has kept a team from being in the playoff or in the national championship picture before in the pre-playoff days? That's Auburn. And I feel like that's... There's got to be some part of that. Like, yes, you wish Auburn was a whole lot more consistent. You wish Auburn was a team that could go in and say we're winning 10 games every year. But your history is based on messing people up. Think about it. Think about it this way. They won a national championship in 57 when they were on probation, right? When they were in jail. 93, undefeated season, first year head coach.
Do it again.
They were not on. Like, that was the thing. It was like they couldn't even be on TV. Because of that stuff. It's like Auburn does this thing. 03, the Jetgate stuff happens with Tommy Tuberville. Auburn had just, 02 and 03, they had just fallen short of extremely high expectations. What do they do in 04? They go undefeated and almost, you know, spoil the entire national championship.
And sort
picture.
Of started a narrative and a conversation around the BCS about a playoff. I think that was one of the first times where the BCS, it really felt like it failed. It was controversial, as any system will be,
right.
But I think it was the first time where you went, there's three teams that all have a great case, and then you watch the results of the national championship, and you can't help go, well, Oklahoma, like, what would Auburn have done?
Yeah, 2010, a team that had won the dumbest Outback Bowl ever the year before, adds a junior college quarterback, a five-star running back, and then turns loose a former junior college player at defensive tackle and wins the whole thing.
And by the way, does so half the games they win by like 6 points?
There's no reason they should have won that Clemson game that year. There's probably no reason they should have won the Alabama game that year.
I've ever seen a center flinch like that. I'm sure it happens, but
right.
In a moment like that. Anyway, they are.
That's Auburn. And so you can either be mad about it or you can embrace it. And I think while you always want your team to be better and more consistent, and I get that, there's also you got to take some pride and joy in the fact, if you're an Auburn fan, that you're here to mess people up. And guess what? Your two biggest opportunities to mess people up are happening in the next 3 weeks.
Follow the Lunch Break on Twitter at Lunch Break ESPN.
This music isn't really helping my tiredness.
I can't hear anything. My headphones are messed up.
We are currently on TLB California Ease 1. You know the one.
There's a little strum to it.
Yep.
Oh.
Very Eaglesy.
Oh. You know, Nathan King, we tried to bring him into our lives here at ESPN 106.7.
Oh, did he turn you down?
Well, so he was going to come in today, actually. We interacted on Twitter.com and arranged it, and then he had something else come up. So once again,
he's too big for you.
Apparently,
that's his deal. He's too big. You know, once you keep him out of the intern Hall of Fame, he just riots.
Is that where I went astray? Is that where we went rogue?
I don't know. I think he's always kind of been that way. I did notice that Jake Wright has failed to make the ESPN 106.7 Intern Hall of Fame in his Twitter bio.
Did he make it that year?
No, he didn't, remember?
Because we only who else was? Well, he came in solo by himself those days.
Right.
Tuesday, Thursday.
Right, remember, everybody else but him made it that year.
That's
a mess, remember? We had four.
That was a good group.
It was a very good group, and Jake was the only one who didn't make it.
Struggling to speak there. My bad.
Yeah. Auburn and Georgia on Saturday. One of the other questions I think a lot of people have heading into this game that I think is very interesting is how the running backs are going to be rotated around. We expect Booby Whitlow to be back, but like with DJ Williams being emerging in Whitlow's relative absence, like how do we see Auburn kind of shaking it out against Georgia? Because they're going to try to run the ball. It's not like Auburn's going to finish the game with 15 carries and just be like, well, Bo, throw the ball 50 times and see what happens. Like I don't think that's going to happen. So like how does Auburn split up the carries in this one? I think it's a really big question. And really, I think they can go a variety of directions here.
Yeah, I mean, I'm curious to see if Williams also gets the level of touches that like could be, you know, a burden, but like, are you giving him 15? That seems like
around the range they probably would want to hit, right?
Wouldn't it also? I mean, I feel like you're really trusting your young running back at that point and making a statement moving forward.
Trusted him against LSU.
Yeah, and I mean, how much of that? I guess
on the road, by the way.
Right. How much of that do you think was also necessary with Booby out? Because you had other options in Cam Martin and
Booby
Sean
was clear
Chivers.
To play that game. He did,
but he played. I mean,
those Wildcats.
Right. I wonder in that game if it felt like your hands might have been a little more tied, but also they talked so highly about him throughout.
And then he was clear to play against Ole Miss, and yet they didn't play him, and they trusted DJ. I think.
It's a good problem. Like
I don't think you're going to see DJ Williams get relegated to like third string again. Like,
which is what
I
some
think
Auburn,
it's going to be very even between him and Booby.
I think some Auburn
and
fans
I be
are,
if he had more.
Are fearful of that, right?
Because their whole thing is, oh, Gus has a good player and he's not going to play him. That's what always happens. And I don't think it's that. I think it's finally you're going to see the things that people have been wanting to see out of Auburn for a while and rotating his running backs more. There were a couple of games this year where we saw this, like you could see a game line up where they, between the top three or four running backs, go 15, 12, and 10 in carries. Like that seems ideal to me, right? Mm-hmm. Like 15 carries for DJ Williams, about 10 or 12 for Booby Whitlow, maybe 8, 9, 10 for Cam Martin or Sean Chivers, however you may be feeling. And then the other one getting some as well. Like I think you want to play fast in this game, but I don't think you necessarily want to wear anybody out either.
Broadly speaking, how much do you agree or disagree with the notion that fans sometimes voice, especially it seems like it's on Twitter a lot, where fans feel as if Malzahn doesn't use some of his best players? How much of that narrative in your mind is just simply off base?
I mean, I think it's a case-by-case basis. I think it was weird that they weren't playing Seth Williams and Anthony Schwartz at the same time earlier in the season. But then again, Schwartz wasn't 100% healthy. I guess they were waiting for him to get to full speed before they kind of moved him around a little bit. I don't think there was necessarily a case where, like, there's this notion that Cam Martin's a bad running back, and he's not. He's a reliable running back who might not have the ceiling of a Booby Whitlow or DJ Williams, but like he's a running back you want to have. He's not going to make mistakes very often, and he's going to protect the ball. And that's a guy where you want to use him as kind of a changeup. And the fact that he stays healthy. Like Cam Martin stayed healthy this year. DJ Williams has had injury issues. Booby Whitlow's obviously had injury issues. Like there's value there with them. But yeah, I think it's just kind of the way it's been used. But here's the thing. When your offense isn't playing as well as people think it is, everything's going to be questioned. Everything's is going to be questioned. Even when, you know, if Auburn's lighting them up on offense, then it's like, okay, well, that was a good game. You know, they made all the right decisions. But if something goes wrong, it now becomes this thing where even more, you can talk about even more and more what went wrong. And it seems like everything's up for grabs in that case.
Is there, you know, so different styles of running back, different roles, certainly within the team, and it's worth mentioning the size difference. Sean Shivers, 5'6", about 180, whereas Clyde Edwards-Helaire, 5'8", and he's about 210 pounds. So there's a noticeable, I mean, that's two inches and 30-something to 40 pounds is obviously a difference, but there have been times.
The funny thing is that Shivers is a better interior inside running back than people think.
So is there a chance that, he, because it seems like he embraces running between the tackles. It's just sort of his mentality of being physical. He wears it well. He's confident in his smaller, bouldery frame.
He's also not a guy that is very shifty.
Yeah,
he's a sprinter.
For someone as fast as
he is. He's a straight line guy. It's also kind of like Anthony Schwartz, a wide receiver. Like Matthew Hill and Eli Stove are the shiftier
a little
guys.
Agile, maybe.
That's why he's not a like for like substitution with Ryan Davis. Because Ryan is very shifty. Now, Schwartz has moves. Let's not say he doesn't have moves at all. He can put the stutter step on people, and he has good moves. But like with Shivers, Shivers is not the guy who's going to juke past you. Shivers is going to be the guy who tries to run past you or through you. And you got to find ways to get that to work. Some of those slower developing plays might not be the way to go with him. Maybe the more thing with him is you let him stick your foot in the ground and go. Mm. It's interesting, man, because I think
I would enjoy seeing them do some of what Helaire did in that game, but they're, you know,
I've said it before. I think the future of Auburn's running game next season, and look, the funny thing about this is I'm going to put out this plan right here and this archetype, and the fact that they're on pace to get the most talented running back recruit they've had since Rock Thomas coming in at one point, and then secondly, they've also got Mark Anthony Richards, mm-hmm. who a lot of people really liked coming into the season, but there's a lot that I see in the similarities of, like, you could see. Go to 2013. DJ Williams playing that Trey Mason role, being that lead back, being that guy who can be the more between the tackles guy. Bobby Whitlow playing the Cameron Artis Payne role. Wildcat guy, a good guy who can be an every down back when the lead guy's hurt, or not even when the lead guy's hurt, when you need to rest him. A little bit more patient as a runner. And then Sean Shivers makes a lot of sense as the Corey Grant type, where it's like, buddy, let's just get him out in the open field and go.
Let someone take a bad angle on him, and that might be the end of that. I mean,
right.
It is a fascinating.
Try him on some sweeps. Try him on some other things. And look, that might be Mark Anthony Richards' job. That might be Tank Bigsby's job. Bigsby could come in and play one of those roles. I don't know. Like Mark Anthony Richards could play one of those roles.
This offensive line and running back, really the skill position group, it's going to be a fascinating off-season conversation about how far that line progresses, because there's going to be an enormous amount of
reset. It's going to be a reset.
There's going to be an enormous amount of talent.
I will say this. I think there's a positive. Yes, you would, looking back, you would want much better play, but I think there could be a positive in the long-term future that if Nick Broms finishes the season well, okay, you have somebody to build around. You have a center next season who will have done it before, and center is so important to your offense, the fact that you would have some experience and you're not just throwing in somebody who's fairly new, and the fact that Broms is getting more experience as a starter, I think is a fine way to start. And then, of course, you get some JUCO guys around here. It's going to be a reset. I will tell you one thing. Auburn's got to get better at run blocking in the future, because for what Malzahn wants them to be, they're not really getting the running game going as well as they should have. You look at the advanced numbers for the offensive line, they're about middle of the pack, and this was a team that we thought would be more towards the top.
Almost to the frustration of Auburn fans, his offenses are certainly best when they have push on the line and are able to move the ball on the ground.
It's, running the ball is overrated now, I guess.
Yeah, but no secret that those offenses have looked good. Justin, if folks miss any of the show today, courtesy of Ace, where can they find it and get plugged into the lunch break?
Yeah, you can listen to our podcast on the ESPN 106.7 Podcast Center page at ESPNAU.com, SoundCloud, iTunes, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. University Ace is your Auburn helpful place, located next to the movie theaters.
Like us on Facebook at ESPN 106.7.
At ESPN 106.7. A poll question. Justin asked, you know what, Justin, you asked it. Yeah. What did you ask?
Well, we do this read for University Ace, and it says, you know, next to the movie theater in Auburn. And I was saying, like, do you go to the movie theater or do you go to the movie theaters Like, what do you refer to it as? Is it the theaters? If it's just one building? Or is it the theater?
Because I don't have the answer here.
Because the theater seems to me like musical theater, like plays and stuff like that. But, like, do you ever say we're going to the theater or you're going to the theaters? You're probably just saying going to the movies, right?
Right, right. I don't have the answer here, but the folks at home, they can. Let us know.
Yes, vote at ESPN1067 on Twitter. Painter?
Justin?
On a serious note, and this is actually serious, a congratulations are in order to Anthony McLemore. He and his fiance had their child, Maverick.
And great name. You pointed this out on Twitter, and some great
all
gear.
Jordan, yeah. All Jordan on the first day you're alive is pretty good way to come into the universe.
Strong flex. Yes. And congrats to Anthony and his family.
How crazy would that be? Because he left the game Tuesday night.
Didn't you wasn't he like a little bit running out?
Yeah, no, Josh made a point of, Vitaly pointed out on Twitter that Bruce Pearl said he was literally going out. I saw that Alan Green had arranged for Anthony to fly from Mobile to Columbus so he could be there as quickly as possible for the
well delivery. Done on athletics part.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And Anthony's already changed his bio on Twitter to Father of Maverick, which I think is really cool.
That's a good name, exciting.
That's a really cool name. But, yeah, that's awesome. And, you know, it'll be interesting to hear from Anthony kind of about early days of fatherhood while you're also trying to be a college athlete. We talked to Horace Spencer about that. We've talked to Derek Brown about it in the past as well, and several other players throughout Auburn. Football and basketball in recent years, so really cool moment. Congrats to Anthony and his fiance. So that's a really big moment, especially after coming off of. Think about that. They came off an insane last second win. He was on the floor for that final possession, and they end up beating South Alabama. Crazy environment, crazy atmosphere, 10,000 fans going nuts. And then it's like, all right, now I have to go to the biggest day of my life to this point. And then, boom. Like, it's crazy. What a week it's been. It'd be interesting if he plays tomorrow.
I don't know.
I would imagine he would, but I'm not sure.
I would expect him to, but they don't need him to.
They don't need him. This might be a stretch Agamboa game.
Wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. This is going to be...
He played really... We didn't mention him the other the other day when we were talking about the game. He played really well. Had a block on his first possession as a college basketball player. I know he played in the exhibition, but he checked in on a free throw. I think Auburn hit it. South Alabama goes down the floor and tries to run, and he boom slaps it down immediately on his first possession. So I like really good start for him, and I think Auburn fans are going to want to see more of him. I don't know. Maybe this might be the opportunity to do that in a game like this where need him.
Yeah, I think. I would expect him to be there, be active, but nonetheless, it would make perfect sense to get some of those reserves minutes.
Speaking of which, about centers, saw on KenPom, Austin Wiley, 16th in the country in defensive rebounding percentage. He's pulling down 38% of the opposing team's misses are going to him. That is an insanely high number. I think he's third among teams guys in power,
which is an interesting when you pointed out yesterday that Auburn, for some of its physical and athletic advantages, they've been fine. They've not been getting dominated on
defensive
the boards.
Defensive rebounding, they're doing a good job.
And you know, some individual players like Wiley Samir in that game against South Alabama had a couple of big boards at the end and had 10.
I thought Dowdy played really well.
But it's an area they could still, as a team, improve in, I think.
Oh, for sure.
You know, it's so.
Look, Auburn has not scratched the surface, I think, of what they can be in all facets of the game. I think defensively they're kind of there, but they're still making some easy mistakes in the half court.
Right.
But, man, when they are locked in, and they were locked in for a lot of that game against South Alabama, it is fun to watch. Speaking of that,
did you see have you followed the James Wiseman stuff at Memphis?
So it just happened again today.
Yeah, they ruled him ineligible like an hour ago.
Right, because Memphis was dropping its lawsuit, or Wiseman was dropping his lawsuit. Now they're trying to work their way to getting him eligible.
I think, and it sounds like they'll be able to based on a Sports Illustrated story that came out last night. But that, you know, that was almost a day ago.
The rule was pretty. It's against the rule, but again, it was kind of goofy the timing of it because they listed Penny Hardaway as a booster, and He is actually his coach now, and it's just kind of.
Well, also,
I get it. I get why it's against the rule, but
publicly too, like there's usually more than ever now. We see more support for Wiseman. Like a lot of folks are just saying, "Look,
Chase Young's the one I'd be mad about."
It's
Wiseman's a whole lot more nuanced debate. Chase Young. I mean, he was trying to get his girlfriend to go to the Rose Bowl.
I think it was Lebatard that pointed this out yesterday, but that Chase Young will miss 4 games for a loan that he paid back. Urban Meyer missed 3 for misrepresenting the facts of what he knew about Zach Smith and a domestic violence, and like repeatedly. So it's a weird scenario.
It's like the NFL, you know.
Why is the adult being held to a lesser standard?
Oh, and it's also like the NFL guy gets busted for weed, you know, might miss up to a year. Josh Gordon, how many times? And I know it's a repeat offender, him and Antonio Callaway, but like, how many times has he missed games of that? And then guys who have domestic violence problems or like serious legal issues, you know, get a slap on the wrist. And that is where we run into a big issue, I think. And it's just not surprising at all that it's uneven when it comes to college football as well. It's not surprising. It is sad, though, that Chase Young's not going to get to play Rutgers, because I think he would like have at least five sacks in that game. Like he could. And the thing about Chase Young is like he was going after the sack record this year, and now he missed the
easy game. You're taking that away from him because
in
he's
the
just
easiest
not play
stretch
enough.
This season. Yeah. Think about how many sacks he could have had against Maryland last week. Think about how many sacks he could have had against Rutgers.
He might have close to 10 with those 2 games. If he gets to play, I wouldn't surprise me.
Because he was wrecking good teams. Wisconsin. We know how good Wisconsin's offensive line is year in and year out. And he was wrecking them in that game. Now you play against 2 teams that can't do anything right. I feel like we've been cheated in the fact that we don't get to see Chase Young go after this record. But more importantly, the guy doesn't get to play. And yes, Chase Young is going to play a few more games. And these games, Ohio State could win these games in their sleep. I'm not debating that whatsoever. And he's about to make a lot of money. Or he should be the first overall pick in the NFL draft. I don't think he will be because I think somebody's going to really, really, really want a quarterback. And I say, wait on your quarterbacks. That's my hot take for this draft class. Don't draft a quarterback this year. There's so many really good players that are not playing quarterback. And what do you have coming up next year?
Trevor Lawrence, if you really want it.
And Justin Fields. Like, that's the other thing. Like, Justin Fields is a really, really good prospect as well. He was really good coming out of high school. He's done really well against Ohio State. Now he's not putting up Joe Burrow numbers or Jalen Hurts numbers. Like, hey, if you're that desperate about getting a quarterback and you before Wade, take Jalen Hurts in a later round, take Jordan Love, take somebody a little bit farther back and just say, all right, well, maybe we can make something happen here. But man, I'm not sold on Tua as the guy you need to be at number one overall when there are guys like Chase Young out there and when there are guys like, heck, I'll say it. When there's guys like Derrick Brown out there, when there's guys like Jerry Jeudy out there, when there's these guys that are just they have been so good at their respective position that I know the quarterback's the most important thing, but like you can also get good.
Build around the quarterback before you get the quarterback is sometimes helpful.
It's helpful, and also you've seen teams get value at getting a quarterback not at one overall. Like, look, Mahomes went to a team that missed the playoffs the year they did it, but like, started to build a good team around him. Lamar Jackson goes late first round, and he looks like he could win the MVP this year. Like, it's just going to take a time for guys to be willing to build around their talents, and so you want to go all in and say, we got to get this quarterback at one overall. Jared Goff, they needed to build a team around Jared Goff for him to get going. They might still need to build a real team around Baker Mayfield to get him going.
The narrative around Joe Burrow in the last year and a half
I don't know what to do with Joe Burrow.
Yeah, and we'll think about what the
really good.
The conversation in the summer going into the 2018 season was this guy wasn't good enough to play at Ohio State. He wants to go to a school that's had trouble not only offensively but especially at the quarterback spot. Now about 18 months later, maybe a little less, that's gone away, and there are people talking about him being the first quarterback taken off the board.
Right. He's good, and I think there might be a sense of, like, if you put him in the right – look what happened at LSU. They put him in the right offense, and boom, it explodes. LSU's also got really, really good receivers. So I think with Burrow, you just got to hit the right spot with him, right? You got to be able to say, this guy is the best because blank. And I don't know, man. People are talking about him as going in the first round. I know if Cincinnati gets one overall, he's an Ohio guy. Like, I know there's going to be say Joe Burrow wins the Heisman this year and LSU goes to the playoff and he looks really good in the process. Like, I know everyone says it's Tua, and if it's not Tua, it's Justin Herbert. But, like, Cincinnati could win a lot of goodwill by saying, we'll take the guy who was the best-looking guy in college last year and then try to work around that.
I think about Burrow going somewhere, and, you know, the Steelers are not an option now because they gave up that pick. But it's like you go to a team where you're not going to – he wouldn't be the starter right away. He would play behind a really good quarterback with a coach that you trust, like Mike Tomlin.
For how long? Because there's a team – The teams that have quarterbacks that are going to be picking up high, this is why I say don't run into it this year. There's going to be really good players you can go get that aren't necessarily quarterbacks. So, like, who needs a quarterback in the NFL right now? The Bengals probably, because they're probably going to move on from Andy Dalton. Well, they already have moved on from Andy Dalton. But you would think the Dolphins. Who else, like, just desperately needs a quarterback? So, like, you let them fight. You let whoever it is, like, fight. Let the Dolphins and the Bengals, if they're so gung-ho on getting a quarterback, let them go do that. And then you can be at 3, 4, 5, and 6, like, well, we can't get Tua Tagovailoa, or we can't get Joe Burrow, or we can't get Justin Herbert, but I guess we'll have to settle for Derek Brown.
Listen to the Lunch Break on the Abby Award-winning ESPN 106.7 app.
About 10 minutes ago, hour one here, trying to end the show a little early. That happens from time to time, Justin.
Yeah, don't do that.
We've got another hour to go here as we close out hour one, though. We'll move into what's on tonight. Justin, there's many ways you can stay connected to ESPN 106.7. Mm-hmm. ESPNAU.com and the ESPN 106.7 app are available to you now. What's on tonight?
Time now for What's On Tonight.
All right, busy night here on What's On Tonight. We will start off in the NFL. Fox 720 tonight, Steelers-Browns. Steelers have been pretty good since trading for Minkah Fitzpatrick.
He's good.
It didn't look like a great trade at the time, but, like, Fitzpatrick's been really good. Like, the Steelers team is still in the hunt for a playoff spot. Might not end up being bad for them. They took on a Browns team that did the bare minimum and beat the Bills last weekend.
Don't want to talk about it.
Low scoring game. Can the Steelers do enough on the offensive end with Mason Rudolph, who's looked fine in stepping into this situation, but James Conner, Juju Smith-Schuster, some of those other guys, and that defense has really turned the corner. Can they rattle a Browns team that, look? Browns are once again on national TV. A lot of people are going to watch it, want to watch them, see, all right, are they for real? Can they salvage this season? This is a big one. This is a big one for them.
Also, tonight, I'm getting ahead of myself. I think I'm going to have my eyes on that Seton Hall game more than the NFL game.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. We'll get to that in a second. But, yeah, I mean, there's a lot to look forward to. The NBA tonight.
Did you watch? I didn't actually see it. I just saw it on Twitter. Doc Rivers' son, Austin Rivers, encouraging the ref to tee him up. What happened? Was there a skirmish in that game? Was Doc just upset with the ref?
Doc was upset about the calls that the Rockets were getting, namely James Harden. There was a big argument, and Austin went over to try to, like, say, hey, tee him up. And people were like, ha-ha, how fun. He's telling the referee to tee his dad up. Yeah, Doc Rivers and Austin Rivers don't have a great relationship.
Yikes.
Like, it's gotten better in recent years, but, like, it's not a very strong one from what Austin has said in the past. Very, like, basketball, strained. Like, very basketball-only kind of focused.
You could see that, right? Like, a guy that would work that much as a coach all of Austin's...
Yeah.
Life. And so, like, the way that they spent time together was Austin probably went to practices and then played.
Yeah. And so I felt a little weird about everybody being like, aha, this is funny. And I'm like, but
it would be if they
We're like really
on better
close
terms.
Just, maybe they're on better terms now. I don't know. It made me. I was having this discussion with my brother last night because he pointed it out to me, and it was like, I just don't feel great. No, to Austin's credit, after the game, he said, you know, Doc needs to calm down. Like, he only calls his dad Doc. That was the other thing.
By his first name.
Yeah, that was the other thing that's always thought it was kind of weird. I don't know, man. Maybe the relationship's stronger than it used to. It did not seem very good. When they were on the same team. Mm-hmm. Anyway, basketball night, TNT at 7. The Knicks are on national TV tonight.
Yeah.
They take on the Mavericks.
Fizdale out.
They're going to try to get him out, it sounds like. I don't know why.
He was extremely popular not long ago, and the Knicks organization
very bad roster. It's like
lots of power forwards.
RJ Barrett, Frank Ntilikina, and like 100 power forwards. And like Mitchell Robinson's hurt, so like even then, can you really say there's much interest in this one? And then the 9:30 game's not that great either. I mean, it's kind of hipstery, but like it's Nets, Nuggets, Kyrie,
off the
Jokic,
beaten path.
Jokic. The Nuggets have looked pretty good. Really, like they've turned it around. I thought Jokic looked really bad to start the year, but he's turned it around. I just don't know. I don't know why they put the Knicks on national TV tonight. That is bad. That is bad. Fox Sports Southeast at 8:00 though tonight. Hawks Suns. Trae Young's been playing really well, especially in John Collins' absence. The Suns have a winning record. The Suns are a very fun team, even without DeAndre Ayton at the moment. I think Collins and Ayton can like swap stories about getting busted for PEDs in this one. But yeah, it's should be a delightful little matchup here. Maction, CBS Sports Network at 6:00 tonight. More Maction rolling on. Buffalo and Kent State. I know nothing about Buffalo. I know nothing about Buffalo this year, but Kent State, of course, played Auburn earlier in this year. They are still kind of fighting to maybe be bowl eligible this year. I think they're like 3-5 or 3-6 or something like that. Maybe they can be in the hunt. I don't know.
I think I'll just be sticking to college basketball.
ESPN at 7, though, in college football. North Carolina taking on Pittsburgh in a game that is always, like most games involving Pittsburgh in the Coastal, very stupid. So you can watch North Carolina-Pittsburgh tonight. College basketball, here we go. ESPN 2 at 6, Towson taking on number 15, Florida. Florida coming off that tough loss to Florida State. How do the Gators bounce back against
pounding Towson.
Probably. But I would mention another SEC team went down. Now, this was a much tougher game than we thought it would be, but another SEC team went down last night. VCU getting a home win over their former coach, Will Wade, at LSU.
Will Wade, how do you feel? You're the spotlight on you, big guy.
There were VCU fans dressed up as FBI agents sitting behind LSU's bench.
I believe it. Do you think he can laugh about that, or do you think that that is something that eats him alive?
It probably eats at him, I would think.
It'd be a distraction.
I would love it.
I wouldn't love it.
Yeah. SEC Network at 6 tonight. Louisiana Monroe taking on Mississippi State at the Hump.
Okay.
Got that going on.
Okay.
FS1 7:30 Panthers is the one you were mentioning earlier. Number 3, Michigan State. Number 12, Seton Hall. This is a huge matchup.
That.
See, Seton Hall has had some injuries. Michigan State coming up. How do you feel like this is going to end up with the polls, though? Because like Michigan State loses to Kentucky and only drops to number 3, and then Kentucky loses to Evansville.
Yeah, what's so the transitive
gonna
the, property going to be there?
There's
going to
be this weird thing that Kentucky might only drop to 2. I don't know. But yeah, this will be a really fun game. FS1's had some good ones this week. Number 3, Michigan State. Number 12, Seton Hall. At 7:30. Painter, we are back in the international break in soccer, and I tell you that to tell you this, Euro qualifying continues on ESPN News at 1:45. We're getting to the business end of Euro qualifying. This is a big one. You ready?
I'm ready. What does the business end mean?
It's game time. This is it. I think this is the last international break before they set the Euro 2020 field. So this is the big one. You ready?
I'm ready if you are.
ESPN News at 1:45. This afternoon. You have to have ESPN Plus for all these other matches, but I'm going to give you the ESPN News one.
I did it the other night. I committed.
Yeah. 1:45. The Czech Republic is hosting Kosovo. Now, I know nothing
about Kosovo.
I know what Kosovo is, and I think I know like one or two. I don't know what
sounds
you call
like couscous,
people.
And I love couscous.
I don't know what you call people from Kosovo, but yeah, that's a matchup that's happening. The Dan Peck Memorial HBO pick of the evening.
We love you, Dan. RIP.
HBO Comedy at 7. a movie I haven't thought about in a while. I remember watching it once and thought it was pretty funny and pretty good and pretty dark. Thank You for Smoking.
I haven't seen that.
It's a very satirical look at like a tobacco executive trying to spin. Smoking's actually not that bad for you. Aaron Eckhart is in it. There was a stretch where like Aaron Eckhart was like in everything in like the mid-2000s. What happened to that guy? I need to find that out. Finally, HGTV at 9:30, House Hunters International. I'm going to butcher this name. You ready?
Ready.
I'm going to say it's Salet de Burn, France. I'm going to say that. I'm going to say it with some conviction. It's probably not right, but I'm saying it with conviction. Salet de Burn, France, House Hunters International. That is what's on tonight.
We'll put it on the poll. What happened to Aaron Eckhart when we come back with the results of that? That's hour one, Justin. You nailed what's on the night.
I don't think we need to put that on the poll.
Well, maybe
I'll just find out myself during the break. Do you think people know who he is?
I don't.
You might recognize him if you saw his face.
You're cultured. I'm not. Sorry. Sorry.
More Lunch Break on ESPN 106.7. To be a part of the show, give us a call at 321-1390 or toll free 1-888-382-7502.
Welcome back to the Lunch Break on ESPN 106.7. Justin Ferguson, Painter Sharpless. Painter.
Mr. Justin.
What direction do you want to go in next with what we've got with Auburn, Georgia this week?
I want to talk basketball, but we can stick
Georgia.
Hey,
let's go to basketball.
I'm fascinated to know at this point if Isaac Okoro, by the end of the year, because he's had a pretty stellar start to the season, is going to be back as a sophomore. And it's not the most important question Auburn has to figure out.
I don't know.
I don't either. I mean,
if he plays like this, he's probably going to be a draftable.
And the best case scenario, right, is he works his way into that first round conversation and decides to come back because he's not a lottery pick and feels like with even more talent next year, maybe Sharif Cooper. And does Sharif Cooper, by the way, it seems like he's working on getting someone else, trying to anyway,
right,
to join him in this class.
Right.
Do you feel good all of a sudden if your eyes go Coro with more of these players stepping into a role? You know, Flanagan, Turbo, Stretch, and then you add those guys, some of which he's already played with, to the mix.
Here's my counterpoint to that. This is a weak class in terms of lottery talent. Like, there's going to be a few guys that you know are going to be top five guys. Anthony Edwards, Cole Anthony.
Wiseman, maybe.
James Wiseman. The final ball that's playing in Australia. Whichever one he is. He's Lee.
LaMelo?
Lee. He's Lee. He's LaMelo. He's LaMelo. He's LaMelo.
The youngest, right?
Yeah, he's LaMelo. He's playing really well in Australia.
LiAngelo's the middle.
Yeah.
Who's forgotten about.
But he's playing really well in Australia. Then it's just kind of like, guys, like, who might separate? And like, Okoro's got the upside, man. Like, I'll tell you one thing. If you play defense really well coming out of college, like, you get attention. Because in the NBA, everybody can score for the most part. And you can develop that. You can develop that scoring. That's why really high scoring guys get undrafted or not every year. It's hard to find a guy who's 6'7". With the wingspan that Okoro's got and the defense ability that Okoro's got. So that's going to make him a very wanted prospect, even if he's not this knockdown shooter right now.
Another conversation to consider right now, Auburn through three games has done a great job of spreading the wealth its scoring. Yep. I wonder if he continues to develop, if he continues to have success offensively, and in particular, if he's able to develop a reliable shot, especially from out
deep.
He's
played pretty well offensively.
Are they going to start going through him more? I don't think it looks like an outrageous usage rate, but I wonder if the numbers aren't quite as spread out. I wonder if they start using him
a
little bit more as the season progresses, maybe even a lot more.
I could see his usage rate going up throughout the year. I also think the more he gets comfortable dribbling, and like, he could also help out playmaking a little bit. being a guy who can drive and kick out to guys and create as well as he does getting to the rack and being his own, you know, creating his own offense.
So we've determined we do not know, though, about his prospects.
Some guys look at him as someone who's going to be a late first rounder. I know some people who think that he has lottery potential. It could go it could go anyway with him. And look, I mean, we saw really good college players decide to come back for this season because their talent, you know, Michigan State's got the best player in the country right now because he was like, you know what, I'm going to wait. And it's just a little different because we looked in college football last year, and Derrick Brown seeing all those guys on the defensive line go in, and it's like, man, I'm really good. And he is. He's like, I'm really good, but like I might not be a first rounder, or I might barely be a first rounder in this mix. Next year, I'm going to be the best defensive tackle in the country, and I'm going to get even better. And that's the thing. In basketball, it's different, though, because there's so much of a premium on youth. You want to get the – it's why one-and-done guys who aren't necessarily awesome in college get early looks, because it's the youth. It's the potential. You're getting a guy who has, theoretically, a longer shelf life. And so it's the gamble you make when you come back. When you talk about coming back in college football, you're weighing – injury, usually, because football is a collision sport. When you come back in college basketball, it's usually, okay, our team's really going to want you. Like, you can be awesome as a 3 or 4 year starter in college, but like, you're naturally going to get, people are going to take a step back off of you because they're like, oh, we're getting you when you're already 21 or 22. We can get this kid when he's 19.
What's the most exciting lineup you think that Auburn could unveil? It may not be the one they employ the most, but is there a lineup that you think that Pearl could toy with at some point in this year that would be really fun to see? Again, it may not be the starting rotation. It may not be, but like at the end of the year last season, we saw Javon McCormick on the court a lot more with Harper than we did at the beginning of the season. And it was just an adjustment. And I think more trust was given as the season progressed to McCormick.
Yeah, I mean, I think my
started playing better.
My favorite looking lineups, I think, theoretically for Auburn's offense are ones where Okoro is the four. And you're talking about a defensive one. Say you have a lineup where it's McCormick and Doughty and, you know, maybe Turbo Jones, maybe a guy like Devin Cambridge, maybe even a guy like D'Angelo, but then have Okoro at the four and then Anfernee at the five, and you're talking about just fast, long, athletic.
And they're not playing as fast at the moment. I think as the season progresses, that will change to some extent.
They're being selectively quick. They're not forcing as many turnovers either. Like, that's the thing, is like Auburn's not forcing a ton of turnovers this season. They're just playing really good half-court defense and getting rebounds and going from there. But, yes, it's a little different when you don't have Jared Harper. Like, Jared Harper and Javon McCormick are not the same ball handlers up the floor. Jared Harper was like, all right, I'm going to go, and we're going to go 100 miles an hour on the other end and try to get it going. McCormick's kind of more of that traditional work the ball up the floor and then work, because it's different. When you have more size, you're not necessarily having to rely on, oh, we got a rebounder, we got a turnover, let's go down and take shots. You can work the ball on offense more because you're a little bit more versatile this season.
321-1390 is how you can connect with us here in the Kia Auburn studio. You can also follow along at ESPN 106.7. Let's go to Brian. Brian, what's up, man?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Pretty good. How are you?
Pretty good. I'm getting tired of this cold already.
I'm embracing it, but we have two different kinds of cold.
Yeah, we have way two different kinds of cold.
Yeah, the other day I woke up, I think it was 4 degrees. That was fun.
Yeah, I would be done with that.
Yeah, nope. So as you guys know, I'm not well-versed in the basketball world, but I am extremely excited for what I'm seeing for Auburn basketball so far.
Yeah.
So,
if you want to switch over to
entertainment fan when it comes to basketball.
If you want to, yeah, well, that's the way to go. If you want to switch over to football, what you got on your mind?
You know, I was thinking about it the other day, and I called GSA, and I get a chance to call back like Painter asked me to. But I think Auburn has the largest fan base this weekend it's ever had, because we've got so many teams pulling for us to beat Georgia that it's ridiculous. I mean, Oklahoma, Baylor, Minnesota.
Yeah.
All those fan bases are now Auburn fans for this weekend.
That's a good point. And I think the same thing will be in 2 weeks, because even more people will want to see Alabama get knocked out.
Exactly. I mean, so I think it's going to be – I'm actually – trying to organize a watch party of some sort, and it's fairly easy to do with all these Minnesota fans pulling for Auburn.
That's a fair point.
I can see that for sure. Yeah, that's the thing we've been talking about throughout the week in today's show. Like, this is Auburn can be the big time, you know, spoiler for a lot of teams. And I know that's not what they wanted at the beginning of the season, but it's a good way to get a lot of people turning their attention to you this season.
Absolutely. Now, to the Georgia game, Painter, yesterday you mentioned how it might be a little bit stubborn for Gus to say, hey, we're going to run the ball. And then
I think that's a collective feeling of the fan base so than anything. But go ahead, Brian. My apologies.
Yeah, not a problem. And then the beat writer from Georgia, Seth Fleming, correct?
Seth Emerson, right.
Emerson, yeah.
Emerson, sorry. Okay. So he had mentioned how he thought maybe it might be kind of a front that he's saying that maybe we're planning on pulling something that Gus isn't really talking about. What are the chances? I mean, I've seen Gus call plays. Usually he's got a bag of tricks that he hides for big games like this. So, I mean, what are the chances that he pulls two or three trick plays and then only runs the ball 25% of the time and Bo Nix does everything?
Yeah, I mean, my thing there is that, like, they've got – if they're throwing the ball more often than not in this game, they're going to have to make sure and see early, all right, Georgia, can you tackle in space? Like, that's going to be the big question, and I know they have a lot of faith in J.R. Reed and those guys and Richard LeCount over the middle of the field, but, like, can you tackle in space if they run screens and a little quick plays off to the outside as well? That's going to be a thing. In terms of trick plays, I mean, I could see it happening. Now, I don't want to say specifically, you know, what to look out for and what not to look out for, because I know Malzahn in the past has, when people ask him about certain plays or bring up certain plays, he'll hear it and he'll just like don't want to put it up this week. But I'll say this: it's been a while since Auburn ran a trick play, and they were running a few of them at the beginning of the year. So I feel like there's a good chance you'll see some more of that, and maybe playing off their running game, and any trick plays based off the running game, if you know what I mean, might be the way to go.
And honestly, I would agree with that. And I might not get a chance to call tomorrow, so I'm going to go ahead and tell you. I think my keys to the game for us are winning in the boundaries. If we can win in the boundaries and have a good day of blocking for pass protection with the tunnel screens and the slants and the things that we throw, mm-hmm. you know, the jet sweeps, if we can win in the boundaries with the wide receivers blocking, I think Auburn is bound to have a huge day. I think if we lose in the boundaries and – ultimately, if we lose in the boundaries and we have to go up the middle, and that's trouble for everybody against Georgia, then I think that's where it gets ugly for us.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be really key in this one as well, Brian. Getting the hits to the outside, because look, Georgia's really good at stopping the run up the middle too. So this might be a game where you need some of those sweeps. You need some Anthony Schwartz involved. You need some Eli Stove and some buck sweeps with guys like Sean Shivers and the like. Yeah, I like that. I like that, and I don't think many people have talked. There's so much strength down the middle of both of these defenses that I agree with you, Brian. I think the outside game is going to be very, very important, and who plays well on the outside. Brian, appreciate the call. As always, stay warm as possible up there in Minnesota, in the frozen north, I guess a lot of people around here will tell you to convert as many of those Gophers as possible into Tiger fans this weekend.
That's not something I had thought about, though. That's a great point. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of teams that want chaos, need a Georgia loss, need some teams in front of them to lose.
Yep.
We're talking about a lot of one-loss teams all vying for that fourth spot. And so, good point from Brian. We'll get to break just a moment early. A reminder, after the game is live from Skybar with Dan Peck and Michael Pappas about 6:30 this Saturday. Looking forward to after the game, after a huge matchup this weekend between Auburn and Georgia.
Listen to the Lunch Break on your smartphone or tablet with the free ESPN 106.7 app.
We're talking explosions, baby.
Bang! Pow! Welcome back to Lunch Break on ESPN 106.7. Justin Ferguson, Painter Sharpless with you. Painter, Auburn High, round two of the state 7A playoffs tomorrow night.
Friday night in Mobile, McGill-Tulin, Auburn High School. If you're not making the trip down, you can listen on Wings 94.3, wingsfm.com, and of course, you can listen on the Wings 94.3 app. 6:30, coverage begins, 7 o'clock kick, round two of the playoffs.
So, Painter, last night I caved into peer pressure.
Oh no!
It's not that bad. I got the trial for the new Disney thing. Insane. That the library is just ridiculous. Like, I don't know if it's gonna be worth it long term for someone like me who doesn't rewatch a lot of stuff, but like, I was just scrolling through. I was like, this is like, they have just decided, all right, we're gonna have all your money forever. Like, I don't know how many subscribers they got on the first. Disney doesn't need any more money. They're going to make so much money off of that thing.
Sarah invested in it immediately.
Oh, yeah?
And, yeah, the catalog is tight.
So yeah.
I've seen it. I've not enjoyed it. Apparently, the Star Wars series is...
I have not enjoyed it.
Is it not good?
No, you said, I've seen it. I haven't enjoyed it. I was like, you made it sound like you watched it and you were like, yeah, this sucks. I don't know.
All these options and classics, get them out of here.
I don't want options.
No. So it looks expansive. Have you started the Star Wars series?
So
isn't it supposed to be good?
So a lot of people really like it. I think I have a. This isn't a confession. Is it a confession? I've only seen one Star Wars movie all the way through, and it was the first one of this new thing that they're doing, The Force Awakens, I guess.
I've seen a number of them, but I couldn't tell you the names of any of them now. I've seen three or four of them, but not all of them.
I guess it's episode 7. I watched episode 7, and when I left, the person I was with said, yeah, that's basically the same plot of the original first one. I was like, all right, good. Like, I feel like I don't need to go back and watch it.
I fell asleep in the most recent one that came out about a year ago.
Because, like, I remember when we were kids, like, the prequels all came out, and everybody was like, oh, Star Wars. And I'm like, yeah, just really interesting.
Harry Potter is the name of the game for
Pantone. But see, I missed both of those. Like, I did not care about Harry Potter. I did not care about Star Wars. My love of Spider-Man paid off eventually in my
lifetime. They made about 11 of those.
Yeah, exactly. But then also the Avengers. Like, just knowing Marvel stuff paid off for me. But, yeah, I kind of missed the boat on that.
Series of unfortunate events, yay or nay.
Yeah, book series was outstanding.
I never finished the book series. I only got about halfway through. And the movies with Jim Carrey, yay or nay. Well, they combined three into one.
The movie with Jim Carrey was fine. The Netflix series, did they bring it back for another season?
I feel like I would have heard.
It was pretty good. Neil Patrick Harris was pretty good in it.
Would someone have told me if there was a second season of that series?
I can't remember if they brought it back.
There being a big fuss about it at the time. People were excited that Netflix was doing it. And then
those are good books.
Whatever happened to old Lemony Snicket, you think? We were asking what happened to Aaron Eckhart. Did you find out?
Yeah, he hadn't done a movie in 3 years.
Is he just on an island sipping martinis?
He's got a couple of movies coming out this year that he's been in, but he has not been in a movie in like 3 years.
I wonder if that was by choice.
Maybe.
Three seasons. Okay. All right, Logan. Series of unfortunate events. Okay.
It just comes up to these things where, like, I don't know. I've got to like really be into something for me to keep watching it. Like, I know how you are with Peaky Blinders.
Yeah. God, it's good. I have a friend that started it this week, and he's locked in. Love it. He's now on the second season. I've rewatched them for a number of reasons. One, just my enjoyment. Two, their accents are so thick. But right. I feel like I need to go back.
You don't throw on subtitles? I remember when I watched it, I threw on subtitles.
I have started doing it more since I've caught up. I like to watch it the first time without it to try to pay attention to everything that's going on and then go back and clean things up with the subtitles because there are things that I do miss and have to rewind it. Watch Peaky Blinders if you haven't.
Yeah. My whole thing is the first thing I did when I got the Disney thing is that they had a new... they had a Toy Story short with Forky in it, and Forky is the greatest Pixar character of all time. I know it was in the most recent movie, but he still is the best of all time.
Well, you point out that they managed to somehow tackle a very difficult theme and a very cute movie.
It's the first ever, like, completely nihilistic, like, horrible self-esteem. I love it.
Speaking of a move that could be dangerous, perhaps nihilistic... The player in the locker room, we've sort of refrained from talking about it because it was a big talking point, especially on Twitter right after the game and the next day after the Alabama LSU game. The player who,
Instagrammed
that. Do you care much about that? Like, it gave us great insight to a really cool moment in the locker room.
He did the same thing against Auburn last year.
So I guess my thing is, if you're Orgeron, how do you handle this? Like, are you like, stop doing that?
Quit going on Instagram Live.
Because I love getting... inside access to a really cool moment for a program that's been trying to get over that hump. But Ed Orgeron doesn't want that out there.
And I don't blame him.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a great... And actually, it's the weirdest weird thing for me where I think most people really liked it. It was refreshing, and it's something you wouldn't see a coach say if he knew that the cameras were on him. On the flip side, there's like going to be that base or that group that says, you know, I guess it's not respectful or whatever.
My favorite thing is...
I guess they'll also remind you of that if Alabama just continues to beat LSU moving forward. Like, if in 5 years that statement doesn't come true, it'll probably be a rallying cry for Alabama fans.
For sure. I also have enjoyed the amount of Alabama fans that have been like, LSU needs to handle this with more grace in class. I'm like, shut up.
Oh, yeah.
Shut up.
It's...
Shut up. No fan base. No fan base has this whole class thing in that. It's dumb. Be happy. Be, you know... This
take your lumps when your team
loses.
They're
called bragging rights for a reason. They're not called bragging rights so you can be like, well, no. If Alabama would have come back and beaten LSU in that game, like it looked like they were going to at a couple chances there in the second half because Ed Orgeron forgot how to play with a lead, you would be dunking all over LSU fans. You wouldn't ever get tired of all that.
I have... If the playoff moves into an 8-team format, the way it also actually hold that thought, Georgia fans, I feel like in terms of the way that they, the bravado which with they carry themselves and the way that they beat their chest is an interesting one to me because they have been so consistent and yet don't have a ton of championships to show for. Like that fan base is another one that at times seems
who was that again?
Georgia just
oh yeah.
Has
They're
been
good.
Consistently good.
Good,
like beats lots of good teams, just that last step. If probably win in the next 10 years, maybe less, the playoff goes to 8 teams. When I look at Alabama's record over the last 12 years, they'd have been in it every year.
Right.
Maybe not 2010, but I think they still finished in the top 8 after trouncing Michigan State and losing 3 games that year.
Yeah.
But that would be possibly the only year in which they would have missed it.
Yep.
And I think the same could probably be said for Ohio State, more recently Clemson, and now Georgia.
Georgia since Kirby got there.
Yeah.
And there were probably a few years when
with Rick. Absolutely.
Yeah. Look, man, it's a different thing. And like it's my whole thing about like Auburn fans being like, you know, you need to be making the playoff a lot more. It's like, listen, guys, like you're gonna enter a season, you're gonna enter a year where you're the only ones who have to play Alabama, Georgia, and LSU every year. Okay, so in order to make the playoff, you got to only lose to one of those teams and then be perfect everywhere else because two losses are pretty much a death sentence. There are exceptions. Auburn came close to it in 17, but even say with two. Like, you're saying, okay.
It's not guaranteed.
Against the toughest schedule year in and year out in college football, all right, go 10-2. Like, that is – that at the go 11-1 more than often than you go 10-2. And so it's like it kind of warps your expectation because – you plop Auburn in literally any other division in college football, they're probably in the playoff final a whole lot more. But you can't help geography, and you can't help, you know, where you've been for your entire life in terms of a conference. I will say this, though. It's a real rallying cry, I think, to get rid of divisions, find a little bit more uniformity. And the fact that Auburn has to play Georgia and LSU and Alabama every year and nobody else does is kind of crazy.
Right on cue. Shadow is on the line. 321-1390 before we get to break here in hour number two. Shadow, what's up?
Guys, is Gus Malzahn on? You remember a couple of years ago when Auburn beat Georgia and then beat Bama?
Yes.
Is Gus Malzahn on calling plays today?
Yes,
like he called them then?
He was not the play caller in 17.
You really believe that?
I mean, he had some influence there, but he wasn't the primary. He wasn't the be-all, end-all guy. He was.
Yes, he was.
Okay. All right. Well, Chip Lindsey was involved. I'll say this. Chip Lindsey was a lot more involved than what his current offensive coordinator is now. I will give you that much.
Okay. Is there anybody else there? Got a different opinion?
No. Painter, what you got?
I'm in line here with Justin on this one. I'm sorry, Shadow. You know I love you.
Well, I'm just saying because you see, there appears to be Gus number one and Gus number two.
I will agree with that.
Because I have seen Gus Malzahn call plays at times that would rival the best out there.
Mm-hmm.
And then it seems like he has settled back into another play caller that is kind of que sera sera. And the urgency is not there. So, with that said, how many passes will go to Anthony Schwartz on Saturday?
I think you need at least five or six in order to be that. I mean, here's my thing with your point there, Shadow, and I agree with you on I agree with you there. It seems like there are two different mindsets with Malzahn. I will say this: it seems like he's a lot more comfortable when he's at home and he's not having to deal with all the crowds and all that, and his young quarterback and his offensive line had to deal with it. But yeah, I mean, they've got to get the ball to Schwartz. I think at least five or six touches have to be the minimum for a team like this to have success against a team like Georgia, for sure.
Okay, so explain what you just said about a different mindset when he's away from home. Explain how that is manifesting itself.
Well, I mean, we saw it in 2017 against LSU. We've seen it at times this year in 2019, I should say, against LSU and in Florida. It's just if it's not working for Malzahn early on, the playbook seems to shrink, and it seems to like, all right, we got to get things a little bit more simpler. We just got to get the plays off correctly because of communication, because of issues, because it's hard to play in these games like that. And instead of trying to open it up and try different things and try to take risks that way, he seems to be the one that kind of shrinks down the playbook from time to time. And that's why I said at home it seems to be different, and that's why I think if you want to see if you get more creative Gus Malzahn, it's more likely to happen in these games against Georgia and Alabama than they were against Florida and LSU this season.
Okay, so then when the playbook shrinks, does that mean his wanting to win the game shrinks?
No, I think I think when his playbook shrinks, it's him saying we got to just get back under control again. And I think in these games away from home, he relies on his defense more often in games like Florida and LSU. And heck, it almost worked for him against LSU because they played out of their minds in that game, holding LSU to only 24 points. I know they had a lot of yards, but it was not very many points. And the defense, you know, was a couple of plays away from really holding Florida to less than 20 points. I don't think it's a want-to, Shadow. I think it's the comfort and the familiarity, because it just gets tougher when you're playing away from home.
Do you foresee that when that is done over the years, that it creates a problem, a dissension on the team between the offensive unit and the defensive?
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing, Shadow, and we appreciate the call. We got to get a break real quick. I'll say this. This team is very well-knit and close together. And there's been plenty of times for there to be that dissension between the offense and defense. Offense, you know, defense thing, and the offense hasn't done its job. There have been years where it looks like that was going to happen, and the leadership of these guys, I think it's player-led. I don't think it's much coach-led as if the players don't allow it to happen, and it's just the attitude they have. Kevin Steele has instilled this thing, and it's a quote he said a few years ago that I think Auburn still goes with on defense, is, we're the firemen. Our job is to put out the fire. It doesn't matter who started it and who created it. We got to get it done. And I think even though the offense lets them down on the field from time to time, they still feel like they can put Auburn in a chance to win every single game and play better even in the games where they do well. Appreciate the call, Shadow.
You're on the Abby Award-winning Best Sports Show in Alabama for 2 years in a row. The Lunch Break on ESPN 106.7. Now, more from your daily lunchtime companions on The Lunch Break on ESPN 106.7. To be a part of the show, call 321-1390. Toll free 1-888-382-7502 or tweet us at Lunch Break ESPN.
Welcome back to Lunch Break on ESPN 106.7. Justin Ferguson, Painter Sharpless. Auburn, Georgia coming up on Saturday. One of the things we haven't really talked about in this matchup is special teams. And it's always one of those things that you want to, in a close game, could make the difference. Rodrigo Blankenship for Georgia, one of the best kickers in the country. I know he had some struggles against South Carolina, but been a pretty good kicker elsewhere.
Yeah, throughout his entire career.
Anders Carlson coming off a game where he missed three field goals. Auburn gave up a long punt return as well in this game. They've got to be on their at their best in the punt game, I think, in this one in special teams, because Georgia's a more talented team. I know you're playing at home, but like you don't need to give them big plays in special teams. For an offense that doesn't create a ton of big plays, you don't do that. And on the flip side, Auburn's offense creates big plays. It's weird. They are second in the SEC in plays of 30 yards or more, but yet are middle of the road in terms of the conference, in terms of creating big plays. Like, it's a very boomer bust offense. So in that case, like, make sure the booms on special teams come on your end and be good in coverage. Play field position, play defense well. It's going to be interesting to see how these two offenses that have been not as great at putting points up on the board, how much they rely on their kickers in this game. Because you got Blankenship, who's been the better kicker playing in a road environment, where he has Carlson coming after a coming off of the worst game of his young career. How does that work? And the other thing, and keep an eye on, you would talk about Georgia kids who want, who you know, always keep an eye on the Georgia kids in this game trying to show out. The one I'm really interested to see is Christian Tutt. I think he's going to have a big game playing defensive back because of all the different ways Georgia will try to attack Auburn. But he's been close to a big punt return this season. This would be a perfect time for him to finally get it.
Yes. We have not talked much about special teams. For what it's worth, this report I think came out yesterday on an unrelated note. Tua, a game time decision. They're playing Mississippi State.
Oh, okay.
It's like,
they don't need him.
Whatever.
They don't need him.
I mean, he could just sit out until the Iron Bowl.
Right.
Wouldn't matter.
Right. I do wonder how much of that is, though, is like, oh, he wasn't 100%.
Yeah,
the
timing of it, right.
Some like little gamesmanship going, like, yep. Wow, you know, we came close to beating LSU.
He just wasn't healthy.
And he just wasn't 100%. Look, he missed the next two games after that as well. I think there's part of that that's going to play into it.
Saban's
I mean, they're going to be smart about. They're going to be smart about this, man. Like, the excuses for why it happened the way it happened on last Saturday have already started piling up. And if there is a doubt that Alabama could get in at 4, there are going to be a lot of people lobbying for them.
Right,
there already are. They're all over the place.
Yeah, you know? A lot of people will argue, well, they didn't have their best player or at least their most important player at 100%. Some people may think that there are other players more talented, but. I guess something of note, but I would agree it's not of note because of the game. Alabama is not going to lose to that team, nor is it going to be close at all. I think it has more to do with playoff implications. We talked some about this yesterday. Like, there's a lot of people that just assume Alabama is going to get it. I think a lot of fans will be really turned off by that, but I still think people will watch is the issue. Like, there will be Oregon and Georgia and
they
other
will
fans.
They will pick a one-loss, or I guess in Georgia's case, maybe even a two-loss team. I don't know. I do wonder what happens if Georgia wins out and loses to LSU in the SEC title game, what this looks like. They will pick one-loss Alabama over Oregon and Oklahoma. They will. They definitely will. And it will be a problem, because then what you're going to do is you're going to see these other conferences go, what do we have to do?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's always going to be one conference that's left out, and that's just the nature of being a four team with five major conferences. And maybe not every year there deserves to be a team, but when one of the conferences has a virtual lock to go undefeated in Clemson right now, and then whatever happens in the Ohio State Minnesota thing, it's probably going to be Ohio State. Then it starts getting iffy if LSU goes undefeated. You're going to put a one loss. Team that didn't win its conference, didn't even win its division, who already played a team in the playoff over teams that had their mistake but won their conference anyway. And then in that case, you'll have conferences go like, what do we have to do?
Right.
And
I understand that you do take into account things that have been done in the past. There's just no way to not pay attention to 12 right. years of sustained incredible success at a very high level, but it does feel like they're being graded on a different scale because they've been great for so long. And other teams, especially conference champions, are looking around going, we don't care what's happened in the last 10 years.
Is Alabama a more talented team than Oklahoma and Oregon? Yes.
They'll put more players into the NFL, for instance.
But the more talented team isn't always the better team that season. It isn't.
Mm-hmm.
We see that time and time again. If that was the case, there'd be no reason to play the games. So you would have this. If Alabama loses one game and gets in over an over a one-loss Oregon Pac-12 champion and a one-loss, let's say a one-loss, or even Utah might even make this case as well, or a one-loss Oklahoma. Here's what you're going to say. If you're Oregon, they're like, well, why the heck did y'all talk about how we play nobody and our conferences, their schedules are so weak when we're getting punished for losing in the first game of the season on a last-second touchdown to Auburn? And then you run the table throughout that, if that happens. And if you're Oklahoma, you're sitting here saying, okay, you had your chance against really took. Yeah, we slipped up, but look at what we've done everywhere else. Like, what's the point? What's the point if you can have the exact same record as another team and just say, all right, well, does conference champion matter? And I don't know, man. Like, but it would be really tough. It would be a tough. I don't know if I'd feel bad at Oklahoma as much as I'd feel bad for Oregon. If Oregon got in that spot and they were like, well, the only loss we had was the first game of the year, and we weren't 100% healthy and whatever, and you're gonna give Alabama a second shot at LSU on a neutral field when they couldn't get it done at home. That's the one that I think people are going to get really mad about. And it's going to be frustrating. It's going to be frustrating. Now, do I think Alabama's talented enough that if there are some questions, they can get in the field? Yeah, sure. But one thing is they're not walking into – they've still got to beat Auburn. And an Auburn team, by the way, that playing at home and a good Auburn team at home against Nick Saban is usually a pretty – they either win or at least keep it really, really close. I'll say that. And then the second thing to that is that if Alabama beats Auburn, that's their best win. So
all
like
year.
They've still got to get that. The resume they have right now is not a playoff team.
Well, everyone's knocking Clemson, but their resumes are eerily similar with the exception now that they have a quote-unquote good loss.
At least Georgia's beaten Notre Dame and Florida.
Right. And Notre Dame is what it is because nationally they just seem to be taking lumps left and right. But there is some respect for that Florida win.
Oh, yeah.
I think.
Both those are what, two lost teams?
Yeah, and
fairly strong. Just
Florida will finish second in their division and will likely finish as a top 10, top 12 team, which is respectable.
That's a really good year.
I have a question for you. One of the good things you do at the Athletic roster management, we're getting to the time of the year. This has been a conversation at different places, and I'm curious to hear your take on some guys in particular who might get redshirted, who might not. There could go either way.
We ran through this the other day.
Did we?
A couple weeks ago. Yeah. Because somebody asked the question on the call.
Well, then we won't do that at all. We won't waste.
There's
a couple coming up on a couple of guys like Nehemiah Pritchett, Zion Puckett, Jalen Simpson, Colby Wooden, I think will get redshirted. And then Jaron Handy. Those are four or five guys.
Jaron Handy probably won't get redshirted. I think he's played in four, right? Yeah, he'll play out the year. I would think he's a key part of that rotation.
I think Wooden's the one where I feel pretty confident.
Wooden's
at
two or three. Yeah, he might get to play against Samford. I think you're probably looking at redshirt for him. Pritchett and Puckett have been special. One of them's been a special teams guy that's played a decent bit, and the other one hasn't. And I can't remember which is which. But yeah, we ran through.
Well, then forgive me.
I think it was 2 weeks ago, maybe? Or it might have been last week. But yeah, we ran through the ones. I can't remember who was who, though. But
I can't help but derail a few segments, Justin.
Yeah, but I do remember. I can't remember. Somebody made the call, and they were asking specifically about Mark Anthony Richards and then
right.
Maybe some other guys that could play after, because Auburn would have three games left at that point.
Fair enough. We'll get into what's on tonight when we come back here from the Kia of Auburn studio. You're listening to The Lunch Break.
The Lunch Break on ESPN 106.7.
Justin, if you give me a few million dollars to go away, I'll do it.
All right.
I'll do it.
I don't have a few million dollars, though.
You give me a free taco bowl.
That's it?
Now, two taco bowls. Am I worth $20 to go away? Matt Luke, though, $6.5
million. You're eating $10 taco bowls?
They're expensive when you go double chicken steak. One time.
All right, hold on now.
Did I tell you about the time I went double chicken steak and they gave me quadruple chicken steak because they thought I'm in a double chicken and double steak and it was a $19 bowl? I ate it all.
That's like, okay, so you got four servings of meat there.
Good for the heart.
Good gracious. Like that is...
Good for the heart. I've got a unique
diet.
You
basically walked into a Brazilian steak. You just made Chipotle into a Brazilian steakhouse.
I am the Tom Brady of this radio station in terms of my diet. Not the winning, but the dieting.
You're scared of tomatoes?
I guess I do like their salsa.
Yeah. What's your salsa combo there?
I go hot sour cream cheese.
You don't like the, do you like corn?
I'm not a big corn person.
Their corn sauces. A1.
Just in general. Like, I don't like corn on the cob, which is blasphemy.
Okay. I know a lot of people who won't ride with you on that one.
One of the worst things about eating apples, and I love a good apple, is they always get stuck in my two baby front teeth, right in the middle. And like I'm playing with my tongue on the back, like the just gets stuck. Like there's a little slight gap, I think, in those teeth. You know, is there any way to eat a banana and it not be gross?
Weird.
And
eat it sideways.
Yeah, and you also not only that act, but then the other one, right? Then the other one is that it's sort of a weird texture, and so you make a mushing noise when you eat it. There's really no great way, like in the same way.
I'll be honest with you. The times I've eaten bananas, like I'm a big believer in like having the banana, and this is the messier way to do it. But like having a banana and like pulling a part of it off of it and then eating it, like instead of like actually physically biting into it, but like having it in my hand and like breaking off like an inch of banana and then like eating it from there.
And I just don't understand.
That seems to be a little bit more,
you know, and it's got that crunch at the top with the part that most people peel. But
oh yeah,
I don't do that. I eat that.
Oh really?
No, of course not. I'm not a freak.
You ever eaten a banana peel before?
I've never eaten a banana peel. I've not tried.
It's
that
not good.
Do some people do that?
Orange peels are worse.
Oranges.
Because every time when you were a kid, you had the peel, and you're like, all right, you're going to see what it's doing. You bite into the inside of an orange peel, and you're like, okay, that is bad.
What goes best on waffles? I contend that it's blueberries and bananas. I like to put chocolate chips and syrup on mine. Someone called me a child the other day. They said you can only put one or the other.
No,
let's,
I agree.
Let's put it on the poll.
I agree.
It's too much sugar?
That's way too much.
Boo.
Okay, but see, here's the thing. When people go to like Waffle House and they get chocolate chip pancakes and then they put and they drown it in syrup, I'm like...
And pecans. Don't forget about the pecans.
The pecans are good. If you get a pecan waffle with a little syrup on it, but like the chocolate chip and the syrup together is way too much. Way, way too much.
I disagree. We will put it on the poll and I will be right once more.
But we were talking about this, the whole Taco Bell discussion was because Matt Luke's getting paid how much?
$6.5 million.
He's got a $6.5 million buyout. It's part of the reason why I don't think Ole Miss is going to make a move after this year. And they don't have an AD right now. And then they also have to buy out the contracts of Rich Rodriguez and Mike McIntyre, two former head coaches they brought in to be the coordinators because they don't really have an actual head coach in charge of their program. It's not good. It's not good. Like,
I just, like, I don't want to knock him too hard.
And also, $6 million feels like nothing
anymore. Yeah, I think it was Josh Dubb and maybe like JG. There was a conversation with them and Barrett Salee about, you know, 10 years ago, that buyout was astronomical.
Crazy.
And now it's sort of laughable. But the other thing about Luke, then I don't want to knock him too hard because he stepped into an odd situation where people didn't expect him to succeed, Justin. But if you knew or at least expected that he was going to be a placeholder, maybe you go, hey, we can get him for a discount because he will be a placeholder. And if he surprises us, excellent. We'll work around that.
He hasn't surprised you.
He hasn't. And so it's like, why would he's just been the placeholder you wanted him to be. Why would you give him a large buyout?
He's made an historically mediocre program continue to be mediocre. Right? I mean, they had their high points. When not everybody could play football, and then they had their high points when Hugh Freeze was there and cheating his tail off in recruiting. But other than that, the history of Ole Miss football is we went to the Liberty Bowl with Eli Manning one time. Like, there's not a whole lot to it, so I guess you get what you pay for, man.
Well, on that note, let's get into what's on tonight.
Time now for what's on tonight.
I don't care for Ole Miss. In case you haven't noticed.
You don't like the bangs? You don't like my people?
Ole Miss is full of a lot of painters.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Are they as riddled with ADHD?
You could be a, you know, looking at you though, you could be a Georgia fan.
Yeah.
You don't play golf though.
Even one of their linemen looked like a Georgia student. Like if you'd taken away the...
Like Fromm is very Georgia.
Yeah. It's like that guy would just be in a fraternity if he wasn't playing football.
I mean, he got hurt at the lake twice. That if that's not the most Georgia thing possible, and he's really good, by the way. Like, this is not me making fun of Jake Fromm. Like, that's Georgia in a nutshell. What would be the most Auburn injury you could have?
We'll think about that. We'll put it on the poll, but I'll think about that. That is a great question.
Yeah. What is the most Auburn injury you can have? Because I contend that time Jake Fromm got a fish hook in his back or whatever it was at the lake, like, that is Georgia in a nutshell. The only thing it would have been worse is if he'd accidentally hit himself with a 7-iron or something like that. Like, that would be the only other thing. Anyway, here's what's on tonight. Fox 720, Steelers-Browns. Do the Browns make it two in a row, Painter?
I think they're in desperation mode, but I don't really want to bet on the Browns.
I still don't like the way their offense looks, and the Steelers' defense is looking better.
I know people are pointing to that win against the Bills because they have a good record. And
they didn't play well.
Well, not only did the Bills not play well, but they have played
Browns didn't either.
They have played a fairly weak schedule to this point.
Right.
So if hanging your hat on beating the Bills is the best you've got right now, I'm not sure that I'm in your corner.
TNT at 7 for some reason. They're putting the Knicks on national television tonight. They host the Mavericks. 9:30 Nets Nuggets. You get Kyrie and Jokic going at it. Fox Sports Southeast at 8. Hawks Suns. Trey Young going up against a really fun Suns team right now. So that could be a very interesting game. College football tonight. CBS Sports Network at 6. Buffalo and Kent State. And some more action for you. ESPN at 7. North Carolina and Pittsburgh in a game that's usually very, very stupid in the ACC Coastal Division. College basketball tonight. ESPN 2 at 6. Towson. Florida tries to get back on its winning ways, by taking on the Towson Tigers at home. SEC Network at 6, Louisiana Monroe taking on Mississippi State at the Hump. 7:30, the big one, the marquee game tonight, I think, in all of sportdom.
I'm more interested in this than the NFL game.
FS1 at 7:30, number 3 Michigan State taking on number 12 Seton Hall. Really good early season matchup. ESPN News at 1:45 tonight, Euro qualifying. Czech Republic taking on Kosovo.
You're into this one. Couscous.
HBO Comedy, the Dan Peck Memorial HBO pick of the evening.
RIP, we love you, Dan.
HBO Comedy at 7. Thank you for smoking. Aaron Eckert has not made a movie in 3 years. Finally, HGTV at 9. House Hunter International is in Salis de Bern, France. Tom Green, friend of the program, mentions that he knows the people on tonight's episode.
Oh, yeah. Tom, we'll have to get some intel tomorrow.
Tom, an international traveler, and knows these people from his time in Spain, and these people are moving to France.
Yahtzee.
So, there you go.
Justin, you've been busy this week. Get some rest if you can. Don't know if you can, but that busyness has translated into a lot of work at The Athletic. What's going on?
Yeah, you got a story up on Bo Nix and Auburn's offense. With one question, comfort or competition, what has it been for the struggles and how can that change against Georgia? Follow me on Twitter at JFergusonAU.
We're back tomorrow for Friday's edition of the show, The Drive with Bill Cameron, as always, live from 4 till 6. Stephen A. Smith coming up next. We'll catch you tomorrow at 11. Until then, keep it toasty.